setting up shop.
Hi everybody, welcome back to another season of Setting Up Shop, the Make a Journey podcast, where myself, a wood turner from the UK, and my friends Heidi, a potter from the United States.
Hello.
And Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
We share our journeys going from hobby to potentially full time, and you know, all of that kind of good stuff, and trying to keep our craft alive and make money at the same time whilst not kind of losing our way, if you like. So that's what this podcast is all about. If this is your first time listening, welcome. Thank you very much. If you like it, please click like. If you don't, then feel free to stop listening. You might benefit from going back four seasons to episode one and starting there. But if not, I'm sure you will enjoy it anyway and tell all of your friends about how good it is to listen to us. This is the start of a new season. We are recording this in January. We are going to be releasing this end of January, early February. I can't remember. Don't remember what we agreed. But we are going to be talking about getting back to the shop, back to the workshop, back to your workspace. We're not talking about goal setting. We've covered that in the past. But this is very much a where we are now, what are we doing, and this time of year, what is it we're looking forward to this year, and some of the things that we might want to do or tackle, and all of that kind of stuff. So, Rasmus, we haven't started with you for a little while, not that I'm keeping a tally.
Ooh.
But I know in the pre-show chat you were talking about the fact that today is the first time you've got back into the workshop since the break.
Yeah.
Do you have a specific routine that you like to do after taking a long break over that kind of season, or is it just getting things hot and smashing them with hammers?
Depending on the state of things, I might have to start cleaning up. This time I was pretty good, and I went straight into heating things up and smashing them with a hammer.
Hey.
Excellent.
For me, it's been 2 weeks holiday where I've barely been in Norway, actually. And yeah, it's been just kind of, slowly getting anxious of, I got shit to do. And then finally getting to the forge and dealing with some of that.
Mm.
And getting back into the slog of things.
So just to clarify, though, during those 2 weeks away, have you done any emails, social media or editing of website or anything to do with your work for those 2 weeks?
Yes. But I don't think I worked more than like 8 hours in those 2 weeks.
Wow.
Okay. Okay. So you just kind of maintained stuff and kept things ticking along. You're not. Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair enough. Fair enough. Heidi, what about yourself?
Well, I don't think that we recorded after I got sick.
No.
But shortly after we ended our podcast talking about how we felt we were ending the year, I got very sick. And it meant that I was not able to get into the workshop, and I'm still recovering. I'm having some nerve issues, so I'm not necessarily able to be on my feet and really working in the shop much at all. So I've been doing a lot of the maintenance and the paperwork and the not so fun part of having a business. I still have my out of office message up just indicating that I'm on holiday still, but not too sure when my body will tell me I'm well enough to get back into the clay. I'm hoping to see if I can push that a little bit this weekend and try and get in there, but totally unforeseen and totally frustrating, because this year I was really mindful about taking care of myself so that I wouldn't have burnout. And my body just said, actually, we're going to do this other thing and we're just going to sleep for a month. So I would say like right before Christmas, I had completed the last bit of things that I needed to ship out. I did have one order that I wasn't able to complete because my kiln went down as well. So it wasn't anything that was a super shock to my clients, but it is something that's like, I really do need to get done, but I also have to give myself grace and focus on getting well enough to do that. So I'm not like down for an even more extended period of time, because I just want to get back in there.
Yeah.
But there's like, we've talked about multitudes of episodes. There's always something to do with the business. I think we did touch on that. I did buy a piece of equipment that I needed to learn. So while I was healthy enough to like sit and work with that tinker, I played around with the laser.
Yeah.
And so I have some business strategies for that I've been kind of trying to figure out my implementation for, and I've been working on figuring out my pricing for 2025, which, guys, I haven't raised my prices since 2018.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. So we know just with inflation and everything else and the fact that raw materials are harder and harder to come by, it's something that I kept putting off because I was like, well, I don't necessarily want to have to disrupt my market.
Mm.
And it wasn't hurting me too badly. Now it is at a point where I'm not priced to a point where I'm making any money off of any of my work.
Yeah.
So basically, like, the wholesale, it pretty much covers my material, my time, and there's no profit at this point after analyzing at the end of the year. So that is something that I'm going into the new year really mindful of and trying to figure out, like, how do I do that? So number one, since 2018, so it's going to be a pretty significant jump. It's not going to be like 5 cents or 10 cents per piece to cover.
It's going to be like $2 or something.
It's going to be a couple of dollars per unit, which I've already kind of talked to a couple of people about where their thoughts are with that. And no one seems to be like, oh my gosh, you're going to murder us. But it's definitely something that's going to probably price out some of the smaller shops that weren't ordering enough of a quantity to make it worthwhile for me, which is unfortunate, but I really have to look at what my business practice is. Like, I'm not, I'm not a what's it called? A nonprofit.
Yeah.
So, I do need to start acting like I'm not a nonprofit.
Yeah.
So just one of those things that, like, I kept him and hawing about in December. And then I actually have actively started working on my spreadsheet since I can't be in clay. But yeah.
So that's a really interesting thing, given how much those who have listened to this podcast for a while will realize how metric heavy, like, how much you record data. It's really interesting to hear that you haven't necessarily revised pricing or looked hard at pricing for so long, and that you are in effect at a point where you're covering costs and that's it, which some may argue is, well, that is running a business. What's wrong with that? It's like, well, you need that profit margin. You need that buffer. You need that extra bit for exactly this kind of situation where you suddenly find yourself not generating revenue for a month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where you know, if bills are still going out, if this was your full-time business, how is that covering costs? How is rental on a workshop space if you didn't have it at home? All of those kind of things. And it's really interesting because someone I know was speaking only this week that they were having a meeting with some of their staff, and they were like, you know, they were just talking about the future plans and everything as they do every year. And one of their staff members looked up and were like, oh, are you going to put prices up again? And they were like, well, yeah, because you want a pay rise this year. Everyone here does. In the UK, they've suddenly raised the amount of national insurance, which is like the tax the employers pay per staff member. So that's got to be accounted for.
Right.
Raw materials, like you said, have all gone up. Where do you think that money's coming from? And they're like, oh, it's really awkward speaking to the customer when they come in and, like, we're selling them something and then, oh, the prices have gone up and it's just a bit embarrassing. It's like, this is literally your job and the way that you earn your living. It can be awkward, yes. And yeah, it will mean that maybe you lose some customers, but you've got to have that balance, haven't you? Are you running a business or are you being a nice person, but you're paying for that?
Right.
That niceness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's not saying that you've got to be a horrible person. It's not saying that you've got to be mean or not be generous and help people out occasionally. It's just finding that balance between, do you want to be a success? And in that point of your business is still here next year or in 2 years or 3 years, or are you happy to just, like, bimble along until it's not financially viable to support this anymore and you have to stop it completely and go and get a full-time job, or just stay with the full-time job, or whatever it is, depending on your situation.
Yeah.
And it can be a really horrible realization in conversation and can be really, really awkward.
Yeah, for sure. It's never easy, but there is I work with other small businesses and they've also had to do the same. So it's it's not like I'm working with individuals. Most of my wholesale is with larger organizations that are also passing along cost to their consumers. And we also have to look at the climate of what's going to happen when tariffs get put in place in the United States, because a lot of the raw materials that are what we use in my industry and in pottery and in ceramics, it's all imported raw materials.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's one of those things that I also need to be conscientious of. Okay, well, right, I haven't raised my prices since 2018 because it wasn't painful. Now I won't be able to produce what I want to produce, number one, because of the shortages, because we're not going to be able to have material. But then also just that cost of what the cost of doing business. It's just, I wish that I would have incrementally done it before. However, I had my reasons and I'm not mad at myself for the reasons that I had.
Yeah.
I can jump in on that though. If nothing else, inflation happens.
Mm-hmm.
And at quote unquote, as a bare minimum, you should adjust your prices every single year to account for inflation so that you actually make the same amount of money each year. Granted, you might want to make more money each year and then you might want to add on a little bit to that. And then you have the opposite of, oh, okay, the markets kind of says this is the price point.
Right.
And it's pretty rigid. I can't do anything really about that, but inflation still happens. And then you have the option of trying to figure out how or where in your manufacturing process you can save on time or cost to deliver the same product and account for the increased cost of inflation and material cost. I have been trying to do that with the roses. I haven't increased the price of the roses since I started making them, which is coming up on 8 years ago.
Yeah.
But I've been able to make more and more of them because I've been able to figure out better and quicker ways of making them.
Yeah, that's on the nose.
Yeah.
But the crucial part is I've been really trying to find out how to make them faster and better and quicker without having any noticeable drop in quality.
Right.
Yeah.
Even to some extent, giving me the opportunity to put in an extra bit of work on them to make them look better because I'm saving so much time in these other steps.
Yeah. I would say that's probably why I was able to avoid raising my prices too, is that I was investing in technology that allowed me to do more mass production. So I wasn't really seeing, because of the number of hours that I was paying myself were reducing, then I was able to pass on that savings by not increasing the costs.
Yeah.
But now I'm definitely at this place where, okay, well, I can't do that anymore. When I look at the metrics and I look at how much time it takes me, I'm now plateaued at that, where like, I'm not going to save any more time by, you know, buying any more equipment. Like, I am at the max for what I can produce, even with all the technology. And if I look forward to this year, like, maybe I will need to bring somebody on to help me. And in that case, like, I would need to be able to support someone else's income. So I need to be more mindful about what the costs of developing products are. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I definitely understand what you're saying there, Rasmus, and it's a really great point about how you haven't put the price up, but what you've done is you've changed the process to make it more efficient. So you've saved money, so the profit margin is still there because you've sped up the process.
Yeah.
I've just bought in bulk, for instance, a load of material. I know both of you guys do the same. So other stuff I might talk about later, but I've bought 8 3.8 meter long boards. I can't remember what that is in feet and inches. And then just to confuse everyone, they're 14 inches wide. So
because they're like 12 foot boards?
Yeah, probably 12 foot boards, 14 inches wide, inch thick, and it's all quarter sawn English oak. So it's the nice stuff with the, as some of the female customers I have, the stretch marks running across it. That's what they call it. And they think it's lovely and that's why they want to buy it. I'm like, whatever, that's cool. But I buy that in bulk specifically because the last time I bought a similar quantity to that was just over a year and a couple of months ago. So I already know that if I worked at the old rate of what I was doing, like speed-wise, that's a year's worth of stock or more.
Right.
My hope is, or my almost a goal, if you like, is that I go, right, that amount of timber, I want to be running out of that by, let's say, October this year.
Okay.
Like, I want to have made so much stock and sold enough of it that I need to be placing a new order. And I can kind of, it's a weird thing to kind of do a metric on. Now, the problem with buying that in that size, something that I've been putting off doing for ages because it's maths, and that is I actually need to properly learn and understand the calculation for working out the price per, what they call per board foot. So if I'm making a 12-inch diameter piece, how much is that piece of wood actually cost me? Which, if all I did was make that same product out of the board, that's easy. You just measure every 12 and you da-da-da-da-da and you can calculate it out. But that's not what's going to happen. I'm going to make pieces that big. I'm going to make other pieces smaller and whatever else. And there's a simple calculation, or they tell me it's simple, but every time I look at it, I don't understand it. But I need to learn that so that I get better at my pricing for that and it's more accurate. Particularly as the company I buy from have just informed me that they need to put their prices up £2 or £3 per board foot. So I will already know that the next time I buy, it's going up by £2 or £3 per that that quantity of that part of the equation. So I need to learn the equation so that I can then kind of go, right, my price now is this, but I know the next time I buy, it will be this. So actually, if I increase my pricing now by 50% of that, I've bought in advance that increased price.
Yeah,
I was just about to ask about that, if that's something you would consider doing, like splitting the difference 50-50.
In the day job, when we get notified, so there were two companies before Christmas who said, hey, just to let you know, one of them said our prices are going up January 1st. The other one said the prices are going up February the 1st. So the company who said the price is going up January 1st sent that email round to everyone on the 23rd of December, and then they went into shutdown. Now, most of the people who would buy from them were already in shutdown at that point, but we weren't. So I did a triple stock order of what we would normally buy at the old price, which they would honour because I bought it. I've sent the email before the 1st of January, and then we've done the price increase.
Yeah.
So we've got a large amount of stock. Yeah, we've got three times the amount we normally would have, but it's stuff that doesn't go off. And we are then able to gain an extra 5% on that. And we can also then say, hey, January sale, we're going to, you know, we've put the price has gone up to the new price because that's in line with what the supplier has said. But we're then able to do a 10% off sale. And we've not actually really lost any margin if we have its percentage. This happens in retail all the time. Some people will be going, that's immoral, some people, whatever. And unfortunately, this is the way that business works. But it's also exactly that kind of thing, Heidi, you're talking about, oh, well, actually, you're paying attention to the news. Oh, tariffs are going to come in. This is likely to come in. What am I going to do before that happens? Wildfires in California, like huge. And I know we don't want to talk about that right now. And I really hope that anyone who listens to this is they and their families are safe and well and not affected. But can you imagine if one of your wholesalers was there?
There's a couple of suppliers that supply for me in South Carolina, North Carolina, and in West Virginia and Virginia that were affected by the hurricanes and the flooding last year. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And listen, it's all about the early bird gets the worm. So, like, if you're paying attention, some people, when they want to reorder stock, are looking at that as an end of year action to be able to put towards taxes. Other people are looking at, okay, well, what's the fiscal year for this company that I order a lot of stuff, similar to you, Dan, where it's, oh, well, I know that every year at this time that they're going to raise their prices, so I need to get in before that. And a lot of it also is like forecasting what you were talking about, like, do I think I can use this up by X and X date?
Yeah.
That's where, like, we really get into the nitty gritty of being a business owner versus being a hobbyist. Because a hobbyist is like, well, I may not be able to use that amount of material, but at least it's there and I can just grab it when I need it.
And it's whereas
pretty. Exactly. But when you're a business owner, like, I don't know, Rasmus, how your steel is calculated, if it's by the pound, by the foot or the yard.
Well, kilo, but yeah.
It's by the kilo. So clay and glaze are sold by the pound, and you buy it in 50-pound increments for clay. And so that's like 25-pound cubes that come in a box. So, like, those things I have to be conscientious of. My typical time for purchasing clay is twice a year. I buy 1,000 to 2,000 pounds, depending on whether or not I have a lot of orders in. So the forecasting goes into that. But I know that my cost break, the biggest margin of cost break that I get is at 1,000 pounds. After that, I don't get any additional cost break.
Yeah. So tripling it doesn't make a difference.
No.
But you want to realistically buy a minimum of 1,000 to maximize your potential on profit. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there are other things that the company that I purchase my product from, they do like every second Saturday of every month, they have a sale where if you go to the store that second Saturday and purchase your product that second Saturday, if I only needed 500 pounds of clay, they would give me the price per pound for 1,000 pounds of clay on those special Saturdays. Same with glaze. Like, oh, well, if you're buying our premix glaze, the dry glaze by pound, we'll give you the 10 pound price versus the 5 pound price or the 1 pound price per pound. So it's, I don't know. It's all dependent on what time of year works best for you with your forecasting. Dan, I know you said like, when is my fiscal year starting? Yeah. Like that's helpful too. But I think also you have to look at your storage, like where, how much room do you have to support storing that much material?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, and again, this is one of the things where I can say this because my wife isn't in earshot, but half of my wood store is probably now irrelevant for the kind of stuff I make.
Well, what do you do at that point? Because it does end up breaking down, right? Like, it's not going
to... I mean, it takes a long time for kiln-dried timber to, like, properly deteriorate when it's stored indoors in a nice environment. But the price of timber only goes up.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. It's like, it's probably the same with steel. Like, the value of it only ever goes up.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing of... Do I pick a time like now where we're in an economic downturn and people don't have surplus cash to then try and sell off stuff? Or do I just wait maybe another year, maybe 6 months? Hey, if we're really lucky, everything will be beautifully financially stimulated this year and, you know, we'll be on the upturn again. Or, as is more realistic, 3 to 5 years, whatever it is, I can wait till then, as long as it's not in my way or I'm not trying to move house or something, I can then go, right, bundle deal of offcuts or something, or here's some planks of this that might be good to some guitar makers or whatever the point may be. I can then kind of move it on. Or it might be that I take inspiration and I go, actually, there's this other product I'd never intended to make, but this piece of wood I've got here would be really cool to make this out of or something. And I start using it as inspiration rather than just sticking to stock color palette, if you like, for want of a better description. But
Rasmus, you just bought like a whole room full of steel, right?
Yeah.
Like right before break.
I did.
Yeah.
And for me, that's more of...
It was opportunity, right?
I mean, it was opportunity and I bought it at the scrap price because...
Yeah.
But also because like this was just a steel rack in the basement I'm renting for extra storage for all of my copulating anvils I currently have. And... It was just there. I kind of needed the steel rack more than anything. And then everything else is kind of a bonus to that. Like, yeah, steel doesn't go off. But if you suddenly want to weld something together and make it look nice, if it's rusty, then you spend ages cleaning it.
Yeah.
And at that point, it is more efficient for me to buy fresh stock than to try to clean the old stuff.
Yeah, that it's almost where like you need an apprentice who you can teach how to properly clean steel and have a separate steel rack and you go, right, today for 3 hours, can you literally just take stuff off here, clean it, put it on that one?
Almost.
And just kind of...
I never thought about that.
Cycle it round.
But...
I never thought about steel going back because of rust. Like, I just figured you just throw it in the fire and it burns the rust off.
When it comes to forging, that's not an issue. Worst case scenario, I can leave parts of it unforged and it still looks like it has got texture to it and not have that mill scale on.
Okay.
So to some extent, I can pick out the rusty bits and say like, oh, I want to use this specifically for this thing because the rust is going to enhance the texture and be a showpiece of it. Apart from that, like in difference to wood, like I can take any lump of metal as long as it basically has the mass enough, I can just rework it into the shape I need.
Yeah.
Dan can't take a long skinny bit of wood and squish it down and make it thicker and wider.
No, but I can glue it together.
I mean, yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Yeah.
And to some extent, it's really impractical in blacksmithing.
But I don't want to.
Exactly. So I bought a lot of steel, and for me, it's handy to just have a lot of different sizes on hand, especially when I can store it in a nice place, because
yeah.
I get the odd job and it's like, oh, the guy wants, like, I need 50 centimeters of a box section. That's weird. And I go to the scrap pile now and I go like, oh yeah, the guy bought it off. He had like roughly that laying about.
So hang on a minute. We've gone from talking about getting back to the shop to justification of hoarding now.
Yes, we have.
I don't need justification.
Which is I'm not gonna step away from that as a, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because, you know, as we've just discussed, timber is there.
Well, I guess, like, do you evaluate your stock at the beginning of the year to see, like,
evaluation of stock is, can I still open the door and walk the two steps to the other door to my workshop and get in without tripping over something? Currently, the thing closest to being in my way, and that's due to my own laziness with getting it organized, is an anvil that I bought for Rasmus to send to him. which ironically is next to a welder.
Ooh, that's scary. But
yeah, so I don't do an evaluation of stock, because my timber is just piled in there. Like, I don't, at this time of year in particular, it's too wet outside. It would take a day for me to move everything out of the wood space and then a separate day to then tidy up, evaluate, decide whether I'm throwing any, selling any, whatever I'm doing. And it's the wrong time of year. That's a spring summer job. And I do that like once every 2 years.
Right.
And like the last time I did it, I got rid of a load of, when you first get into wood turning, you start going, oh, I'm going to, every it's free wood, I'm going to keep that. Like, and it's a freshly cut down tree.
Yeah.
And then, or someone's giving you like weird stuff, like, oh, it's a piece of rhododendron. I must be able to make something out of this, which is, and it's like a shrub, but it's a large piece of wood. And it's like just sat in your workshop with bugs still on it and like possibly live woodworm and all kinds of things, but you don't really know about that.
Mm.
So I had a whole stack of those. And they made really, really good firewood for the outdoor fire pit right next to the barbecue during, you know, September, November time.
Yeah.
And I didn't regret it at all. I didn't have a problem with it. None of it was rare timber. None of it was stuff that I would have likely to have used. It had a load of branchwood on it, knots and all this kind of stuff. But when you're starting out, you don't know any better.
Yeah.
But stepping away from that, so that's not something I would do at the beginning of the year. But certainly for me this year, getting back to the shop has been a bit harder than normal.
Hmm.
Had a couple of things happen over the Christmas break, which probably haven't put me in the right mindset. The first one being is that our beloved shop cat, unfortunately, reached the end of her age. Mm. She would have been 16 this year, and she died in the early hours of the 27th of December, which frustratingly was also a day I had to go back to work and do a live demonstration of wood turning. So I imagine I looked like a complete psychopath to our neighbour at 6:30 in the morning in the dark with a head torch on, digging a grave for the cat in the back garden. but, it, you know, it needed to happen. And so, yeah, so that's kind of been a bit of a mental shift for me for the last couple of weeks, and dealing with that, because we don't have children and she was the closest thing to us that would have been like that. But anyway, not trying to bring the podcast down. The second thing that happened was last weekend, my van completely broke down and died.
Hmm.
Won't go into details, but it's not happening. And I then had to make a very interesting business decision. Do I buy a new van, or do I buy the 8 boards of timber that I was already intending to buy, which will give me hopefully, you know, between 8 to 18 months worth of stock, which will allow me to generate revenue to potentially then buy a new van. Mm. And so I've, of course, made the decision to buy the wood. We're in a fortunate position at the moment where my wife got a new car earlier in the year, which ironically is currently undergoing some repair work. But her old car, while still functioning, wasn't worth anything to try and sell it on. So I said, look, we tend to historically have problems with our vehicles during the winter months. Let's just keep hold of it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Smart.
So fortunately, we're in a situation where I have a vehicle to get around, and currently I have no requirements to move anything big or heavy other than the anvil at some point, which is has literally just occurred to me then. I'm like, oh, okay, this could be interesting. But it does mean that we're able to, I'm still mobile, so that's not a problem. It's just commuting around in a smaller vehicle.
Right.
So both of those things have kind of rocked my intentions for the year a little bit and made me reevaluate things rather rapidly, which is frustrating because it's kind of put me off going back into the workshop for a bit. I did go out there the other day, but I did a project that didn't need to do because there is no time scale on it, but I knew was on the list of things to do for my wife. Hmm. So that was good. That was good to get that one ticked off. So that was out of the way, and it was something in the house that I'd see every day. And I've sort of started planning around some commission work that I was asked if I could do, and I said would be fine in January, February time. So I'm not behind, but I'm also not where I intended to be with the physical workshop. But what I have done before all of that happened, I actually got ahead on my 12-month plan, which I actually made with my wife back in late November, early December. And what I would suggest, as I sort of briefly mentioned before, is if you're anything like me and you do suffer a bit from seasonal depression or just generally feel blue January or whatever else that may or may not happen, it's not a bad idea to start your goal setting at a completely different time of year. Forget about the fact that the rest of the world is going new year, new me, whatever, because your hobby or your business or the hobby that you want to become a business, hopefully is not just a New Year's resolution. It is something you're wanting to continue throughout the year. So whether it's beginning of a new fiscal year or in the run-up before the Christmas period or something, might just be worth setting some time in the calendar and going, right, this is where I'm going to then take the metrics for the year, take my numbers and go, right, what's my plan for next year? You know, what's the direction I've been going in? Where am I going to? And I think we've mentioned in the past as well with this kind of thing, it's a really good thing to do this with people who are close to you and to your business. So do it on your own, fine, but then like go over it with someone else, either a partner or, you know, a friend who's helped you out a lot and just talk things through. Pick part of that community aspect because it really helps. So yeah, so going forward with the year, I am now, it's no longer Bevel. It's no longer Bevel Wood. It's now tarrants.co.uk. That's the website. That's the Instagram page. That's the... should be the Facebook page as well, but something meta is going on there. So I'm not sure if that is changing or not yet. The rebrand is there. The website needs tidying up, but that's something to play with indoors in the cold rather than being out in the cold workshop. So yeah, there's still stuff chugging along that then is like kind of ahead. And I've got left for quarter one's plan. Tidy up the website. I get to design a new business card, which is always fun. And then the only thing I'm struggling with other than getting in the workshop and doing physical work is finding someone willing to actually deal with me financially, which is ironic. However, before he hears this, as I doubt he's listening at the moment, but in case he is, there is a fellow maker who is a qualified accountant who has just started asking if people doing this would be interested in using him for accountancy and bookkeeping services.
Ooh.
So I may be reaching out to him soon. And if he is listening, the only reason I haven't spoken to you yet, James, is because I'm not, you know, a little bit too close, a bit too friends. And I'm not entirely sure it's a good idea, the whole kind of friends knowing about your money situation, and it can cause problems. So I'm just trying to consider that one yet. But if he's not listening, then that's an irrelevant statement. So I'll have to make sure he starts listening to the podcast and that he catches up. And then if he ever sends me a message, I can say, right, now that you've heard that, let's have a conversation.
Is that second degree self-guilt you're implying?
I'm not sure.
Feels like it.
I'm not sure. I don't quite know. It might be. I don't know. I that sounds like one of your weird Norwegian terminology. What do you mean by that?
No, like you're trying to guilt yourself into doing something by having someone else remind you to do it by not even being sure that they will be in capacity to hear what you're saying.
Possibly. it's late in the evening for psychoanalysis.
Okay, never mind.
For me, anyway. I mean, it probably isn't. It's probably the perfect time. I'm a bit tired and a bit hungry. So yeah, catch me when I'm most vulnerable.
This is when the truth comes out.
Yeah, exactly that. Like, yeah, exactly. Fortunately, I'm not cold as well, so I wouldn't just be going, that's fine, that's fine, anything. Yes, yes, just give me some food and some warmth and shelter. Love me.
Rasmus, it sounds like you're your approach to the new year is just like keep going with what you were already doing. Like there's no like it's not really a reset for you.
I think he cheats because he's full time.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a choice, so he's got to keep going.
I mean, yes, there's that. I am afraid of stopping, but also I partly rebellious against the New Year's resolution thing because it never really seems to work, mm-hmm. and partially just because this is how my business ended up operating, is I kind of end up doing like a 3-month evaluation just continuously, where I'm sitting down and going like, okay, next 3 months, what's the classes? What's the markets and what's the stuff I want to do for myself in the workshop and what's the client work I have lined up, and then trying to schedule that out. And as with any good plan, it stops working immediately when you try to put it into effect. Mm-hmm. And then 3 months afterwards, I need to do the same again.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of working it, actually, doing a 3-month or quarterly thing. And exactly as you've said, it will immediately not work. But the point of having done it in the first place means that you do like have that subliminal level of direction and the intention and the kind of the movement towards that kind of thing. I mean, I don't know if that actually works for you, but I know for me that that would definitely have an impact on the way I was doing things.
Suddenly I remember a quote from when I was in the officer school. Plans are nothing, but planning is everything. It is the process of preparation that prepares you for what's going to happen, not the plan of preparation.
Yeah, proper preparation prevents poor performance.
Yes. And to me, that just ended up being sort of necessary because I have a lot of things I just want to do, sort of the things that motivates me to keep doing this business. And then I have annoying customers that sometimes shows up and want me to do other things. And I sometimes give them the fuck off price and it doesn't work. And I need to find room for those things. It is a good problem to have, granted, but I can't schedule my time visually upon the prospects of clients just showing up wanting to give me money. I need to plan my time around the things I know can give me money. And then I, in theory, put aside enough time so in between things so that I can do the prep work, I can do the cleaning of the shop, I can take on extra work. But generally speaking, I can't rely on that too much. I always need to have a backup plan of saying like, oh, so this week was supposed to be client work week, but nothing big enough came in. I'm only got 1 day's work. So I'm doing that, and then I can get a head start on making stock for next year. Or I have this idea I want to prototype and get sorted.
Do you guys, just a thought about you saying about stock for next year, do you guys make a list of this, based on previous experience, this is the amount of X product I think I should make for the next year? And if you do, because this is something that's going to be new to me this year, just thinking about it, I'm just thinking, obviously, if you sold 20 widgets last year, do you make 20 for this year, or do you make like 15 so that you're making a percentage of it, so you're not then potentially overstocked? Because obviously you don't want to use all your materials up and then find out that product doesn't sell. But you also want to, because the reason why I say this is that I had a realization through the Google My Business review page email thing came through, and like 4 or 5 people had looked at a product of mine that I haven't had in stock for like 2 or 3 months, but they looked in it in the run up to Christmas. And I'm pretty sure if I'd had it in stock, I would have made a couple of sales.
Yeah,
and it's a super simple product, but it just didn't even occur to me to actually make sure that I had that sort of stuff in my website actually in stock. And so that kickstarted me to thinking, well, this is ridiculous. If this is a stock item, like that means you should always have it at least in stock, or an estimated time when it's going to be back in stock, or whatever you want to call it. Which, you know, if you make batches of things, or if you make a limited range of stuff, is not quite the same. We're talking about like the everyday sales. But I was also going to, and I think I mentioned this last time, I'm going to attempt to at least 1, if not 2 working days a month of manufacturing, going to start trying to build up Christmas stock.
Yeah.
That may or may not be seasonally specific, you know, so it could be stuff that will sell throughout the year, but tends to sell well at Christmas, or it might actually be things like turned Christmas trees or whatever. Yeah, so I'd just be interested to hear both your thoughts on, like, unless I've already answered the question, on how you kind of judge, like, you know, is it a percentage of a metric, or do you make the whole metric, or what do you tend to do? Heidi, we'll start with you.
Well, definitely if I have downtime, like, I put together a weekly list of, like, what what I have drying, what I have to throw, what I have ready to glaze. I have a whole slew of just what you would consider as like bowl blanks. I have a whole bunch of planters and bowls and just odds and ends of things that I use as fill in for like if I don't have enough orders to fill the kiln or if I need to fire maybe one piece. I have a whole bunch of things that I can put in the kiln and be ready to just like put into crates and put them in my garage to have for whenever. So I do have some preemptive things that I make, but as far as like preemptively making client specific things that I know that they order over and over, I don't. Although I have the metrics year over year of like how many they order, I am not super comfortable in investing my time for those things because they're very client specific. They're not things that I can offload to somebody else if they end up not ordering this year. Or if they decide to come back and say like, actually, I want to do a whole different design. Then I'm kind of stuck with the last year's design or whatever. But there are things like the Pittsburgh mugs that I make over and over and over again. There's like 5,000 of those out in the world now. So those ones I do have a good bit of stock already kind of like in the wings waiting, which helped me a lot at Christmas time when the kiln went down. I already had some. I was able to just pull them out of storage, put them in a box and take them to the shop to sell. But there, I mean, as far as lists goes, I have my forecasting of what I think I'm going to need. And that like preempts me to make sure that I have the right glaze colors, that I'm sending my follow-up emails out like, hey, are you still intending last year? This is how many you ordered. You sold out by this point. Do you want to increase your order? Hey, I know that you didn't sell all of this color. Do you want to continue using this color? Do you want to change it to a different color so I don't order the glaze? So there's like, again, it's just really being educated about how well things are going with your clients.
Yeah.
And having a lot of notes, apparently.
I have a database. It's not a notebook. It's a database at this point.
What about you then, Raz? Do you do much in that regard?
I haven't. I don't think I did it for 24, and I haven't done for 25 yet. I did it for 23. And I basically just repeated the same recipe, more or less, of going through like all of the things I sold online, all of the things I sold at markets, and just counting out a, like a rough estimate of the numbers and the quantities and the style and types of things. And then I tried to do a lot of that manufacturing early on so I wouldn't have to stop and do that rush-like in between markets. Now I haven't done that so much. And that's partly because I haven't had the time to invest into proper manufacturing because client work shows up or I fall behind on other things, I get sick or my plan just doesn't work out and so on and so forth. Just strategy-wise though, because you asked about that, I think, in the beginning, I don't think I will ever try to make more than 75% of what I expect to sell in a year in one go. But that needs to account for when I have the time to make it in between the big pushes of things. So like if, like you say, if you're manufacturing things only for Christmas season, you need to be pretty sure you're making enough to last the whole Christmas season.
Yeah.
But if in my case, where I have a bunch of markets in May and June, and then another one in November, December, then I can spend like, I can divide things up into 6 month block. I can plan things around that. I can, and if I'm lucky then, okay, I make 75% of what I expect to sell of a year, and maybe I sell more than I did first time. Okay, I have enough for the first half and I can take that number and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
But because of markets continually change, taste change, and some of your repeat customers already have that thing, so then now they're looking for something else. Like the whole metric system is going to shift continuously. It's just a matter of how quickly and which part is changing the most. So I wouldn't invest too much in one single item. But this is also something that keeps biting me in the arse because I keep doing it. Because like, oh, I overestimate my ability to focus on one thing at a time, or I underestimate the amount of time something will take, or just something happens. And Norway, winter, like crazy snowstorms can come. And you might think like, oh yeah, it'll take maybe an hour extra to clear the snow and get to the workshop. And then you end up spending 3 hours. And I was like, well, fuck. okay,
yeah,
now I have a problem. Now my entire timeline is screwed. But that's the excuses I keep telling myself. But for example, now I have like a fair amount of products that is basically half done. I have 20 knife blades that just need finished grinding. And I was like, well, that is handy for whenever I realize I just need to make a few extra and go to the market. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a bad thing to not be able to finish all of your product, because it can be actually a reasonable time investment of saying like, hey, I got a day now. Let me just spend the entire day doing this one process, see how many I can make, and then I count that over compared to what I need, and then I finish just that number. Right. And then I have this pile of half-finished stuff that can just sit on the shelf, and it doesn't hurt. It can just be like, oh, now it's a 5-minute investment to finish these up instead of 45 minutes or something.
Yeah, I've got sort of, as both of you already hinted, I've got piles of like, I think I've got a pile of about 10 to 20 plate blanks that are cut out. They're ready. Mm. They just literally need mounting on the lathe, shaping, sanding, and off they go. And it's the kind of thing which really, I could either sit there and go, right, I'm going to do a batch of these, or you just grab one. Like you've got, like you say, I've got a spare 30 minutes at the end of the day or whatever it is. I could make one of these products.
Yeah.
You know, before I then need to tidy up or whatever. I'm also very conscious that we are, I don't want to ostracize listeners who are near the beginning of their journey.
Oh, and sure.
We're talking like, you know, all three of us are fortunate to be that bit further along where we've either got wholesale customers or we know the markets we're going to be doing for the year or whatever it is. If you guys are sort of, this is the, you're literally, you know, you've got one product or you are a particular type of crafter and you haven't decided on what products you're making yet, this should all still be helpful, but please don't let it scare you mm-hmm. or put you off. This can be scaled up or down. Like you've sold 5 products last year, whether or not they were 5 embroidered badges or they were 5 full 8-foot resin river tables, whatever it is, one end of the scale to the other, elements of this should still be relevant and hopefully helpful to you. One thing I am beginning to consider a bit more, and to a certain extent this podcast and chatting to these guys has helped me a lot, is I am starting to consider more potentially finding some form of business mentor that I can check in with, just to not give me advice or tell me how to do something, but give encouragement, give alternative suggestions to someone who is outside of my world, and kind of go, hey, have you considered? Or maybe give me a nudge in a different direction or a suggestion or a thought process that pushes me back on track when I wander away from things and put barriers up out of fear and that kind of stuff. But again, because it's me, this is the beginning of a thought process that will probably be 2 years before I manifest it actually into something useful. So there is a lot of different ways that you can get back into your shop, start thinking about things, and sometimes it's just about going and picking up some stock and putting something on the lathe in my case, or throwing something on the wheel, or having an iron in the fire and just making a thing, just doing something for fun, just keeping the skills sharp, because all three of us have a perishable skill that we've learned and we're trying to improve, and they do get rusty or go away.
I felt that today.
Yeah, yours is a lot more physical.
2 weeks and you already felt it.
Yeah,
after
well,
2 weeks?
Both of you are a lot more physical job than mine, craft than mine, I think. And
I was just noticing the only big thing I needed to do today was kind of reforge some stock of knife steel before a kitchen knife class I'm teaching with the help of a buddy of mine this weekend. And I just, in the feel of how I was moving through the workshop, just felt awkward. And I also felt so incredibly slow just using the power hammer and trying to get it down to the correct size. And it's like, yeah. And I remember doing this exact same thing on a lot bigger stock and just nailing it in the middle of December.
Welcome to aging.
I wonder what I'm going to feel like. I am going to try and get in the studio on Saturday, and it's been a month. And Ben said to me, because I told him, I was like, I don't have an on-off switch. I'm like, once I'm in there and I'm like down to business. Mm. And I'm really concerned that like I'm going to overwork myself. And he's like, just concentrate on like maybe two big vessels that are complicated.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you'll get start getting your stamina back. And I was like, that wasn't even an option in my head. Yeah. Like, it was just like, no, I have an order for 50 pieces. I'm going to do 50 pieces this weekend. And he's like, well, maybe you should just like throw two vases and, you know, make them
warm up on something that doesn't matter as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, my eye on the prize personality that I have, it didn't even occur to me that I could start out small. Yeah. It just didn't. I'm so like just that person that it wasn't even an option. So like you were saying, Dan, about like going to the people that are close to your business and close to you and, you know, that you can feed off of, like we were just sitting at lunch, like eating lunch today. And he was just asking me like, how are you feeling not being in the shop? Cause that, I told him, I was like, I'm feeling a little depressed, to be honest. It's, I mean, cliche to say it's centering for me because it's pottery, but it definitely helps with my anxiety. It helps with, you know, all the other things that are around me. It's a therapy, and to not be in the shop just keeps digging this hole of just frustration with myself and with the weather and the cold and the dark and the bleh and the bleh. And the, but you know, to me, it's like all or nothing. I need to go in there and do 50 pieces. And he's like, hey, dummy. He didn't say it because he loves me, but I know that's what I was thinking. Hey, dummy, just do two pieces. So Dan, just go do two pieces and make them fun. And break the cycle.
Yeah, absolutely.
let's do that for each other. Okay.
Well, in that case, then shall we do that? Shall we hold each other accountable? Shall we do two pieces and send photos to them, and I'll put them up on the Instagram.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're creating content as well. So so there's two reasons why we must do this, rather than just stepping away from it. That's cool. I like that. And then I just wanted to end on this little thing that just suddenly occurred to me. So the wood turner who did my assessment for becoming a registered professional turner, he came into the shop this week. He is 76 years old, but you would look at him and think he was maybe mid to late 60s at a push. You know, he's like one of these wiry, leathery guys who just keeps going. He's like, you know, still fully active and everything else. Lovely, lovely man, full-time wood turner. And he came to apologize because he didn't manage to make the wood turning demonstration I made at the end of the month. That was absolutely fine. But he just said, oh, out of interest, what did you turn? And I explained to him, well, actually, I mounted a candle, like a cathedral candle on the lathe, and I shaped it. And I think I'd showed you guys like the idea. And what was lovely about that was other wood turners I'd spoken to about it were kind of like, oh, that's a bit different. And then dismissive. Instantly, he was like, oh, that's really interesting. Oh, I've not considered that before. And bearing in mind, he's been a professional wood turner for like well over 30 years. And he was like, all right, so what tool did you use? If you use this one, did you get this? What effect happened with this? And it was just seeing that the animation behind his eyes and the fact that you could physically almost see the synapses firing of, oh, there's an idea. Or what about if we did this? And how did that work? And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the fact that I was able to trigger that in his head, not trying to sound arrogant at all about this, but it was warming to me because it was the reciprocation for the assistance. You know, it was that kind of like, hey, you've provided me with knowledge. Now I've come up with this idea, which I'm sure I'm not the first person in the world to, but from his perspective, I am. And so it's there's an idea. Oh, now I can do this thing. Oh, maybe I should do something different. So I wanted to share that because this is what literally as we've just experienced there, right? You make two pieces, I'll make two pieces. And it's that kind of little thing of, oh, well, now I've got a reason to go out there. Now I've got a purpose to go and do the thing. It's not about, right, we're generating revenue. We've got to do this. This is the new year. I've got to start working on a new product. It's like, no, just go and turn the machine on and remember why you do this. and just allow your brain to kind of explore, have a bit of fun, have a fun day kind of thing, or a fun 3 hours or whatever. So yeah, just wanted to share that with you guys.
I like
That shouldn't be just for New Year's though. I feel like that should almost be like...
No, it shouldn't. We've had a whole episode about that, Raz.
I'm just realizing, that should be like the beginning of every month. Just remind yourself why you love the craft.
Yeah. Well, maybe between us, we will have to start doing some monthly challenges or something, or, you know, as generic as we've just thrown down for each other. And that's something that we can share.
Just turn just two things. Just make two things, dude.
I'm going to turn two of the smallest butt vases you have ever seen.
Oh my gosh. I want to try and throw big.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then casual other news, I may or may not have another lathe coming.
Ooh.
A new one or like a hand-me-down or what's...
Hand-me-down that's... bigger than I currently have.
Ooh.
Yeah, it weighs 200 kilos. But anyway.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's barely an anvil for you, Raz, but in the wood-turning world, that's you know, it's a reasonable...
It's a half-grown anvil.
Yeah, it's a half-grown anvil for you. I'm just trying to think, what's the total dimensions? I'm completely derailing my own podcast now, which is great. That's what this is all about.
Well, while you're derailing, speaking of passing on inspiration to people in your daily life,
yeah,
one of my coworkers, she knew that I was doing pottery, and she was like asking about the pottery and stuff, and then she realized she had a lathe in the basement.
Nice.
That she bought because she wanted to learn how to do wood turning. So her husband got her a class with, I think it was Rockler, just a generic, like small bowl turning, session at Rockler. And, now she's all set Fantastic. Up in her basement with her lathe and she's all excited. And she's asking me questions about like setup and like what tools she should use, if she should use the carbides or not. And, I was like, well, it's probably better for you to start off with actual lathe tools that you have to learn to sharpen because it'll make you a better wood turner. But I did tell her, I was like, I do have easy wood tools, not gonna lie. I got free ones when I was in England.
They're plug and play, they're fine. So
if it
comes to fruition, so the lathe I'm receiving is 5.5 feet long.
Oh,
nice.
Cast iron beastie, and it's less than 10 years old, so it's not like I'm not getting like an old lathe like I wanted, but the difference is that this one is a lot cheaper than I would have been paying. But we will wait and see if it happens. If it happens, then I may share more information for anyone who might be remotely interested.
Like 90% of the people that listen to this podcast would
probably... Well, we only have 10 people who listen and 9 of them are wood turners. I don't think that's an even spread.
Well, there you go. A chocolatier and 9 wood turners.
Well, we all know who our favorite is. So Ronnie, please keep listening. Yes. And, actually, Ronnie, if you are listening, I am going to be in America in October, and Heidi is possibly going to be in my vicinity during that weekend. So I will be more than happy to purchase a selection box of your chocolates.
I'll get some,
pre-warning you, Ronnie, you've got a bit of time to think of some. We'll talk off air about that. Oh, well, it's been lovely chatting to you guys. And it's definitely lifted spirits a little bit. And for those who aren't already aware, as discussed before, merchandise will be coming soon.
Mm. Working on it.
Absolutely. There will be clothing. There will be stickers and various other things. So keep your eye out for that. And we hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give it a listen, give it a like. You can now rate things on Spotify, I discovered the other day. As long as you've listened to at least 2 episodes, you can leave a review and a rate. Please, if you feel willing to leave a review, then may as well make it a 5-star, because that does help push us up the rankings. If you haven't got to this far through the episode because you didn't like it, then you won't hear anyway, so why leave a bad one? We are also on Patreon. Not much in the way of rewards at the moment, but those of you who sign up early might be more likely to get a nicer reward when we get to that stage. We have already planned out things for this season. We have looked at guests. We have got more things coming in. Please keep listening. Please, please listen. Listen, enjoy us. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good year. And we will respond to any comments on the following places. So you can get hold of us via settingupshop.com. That's shop spelt S-H-O-P-P-E. There is an email address, info@settingupshop.com. Or you can get hold of us individually at Rasmus Lowen. Is Rasmus's contact. That is his Instagram. Heidi is at Whitehall Pottery. And I now am at tarants.co.uk. That's T-A-R-R-A-N-T-S, no relation, .co.uk. That's a very regional joke for the other two who are looking at me very confused. But if you get that joke and understand it, then send me a message and comment on it. That would be appreciated. But other than that, it's been lovely talking to you all. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.